Hi, and welcome to In the Studio. I'm Redbeard, bringing you the stories behind the greatest rock and roll albums in history.
You're welcome.
Guitar up.
One,
turn
two,
that guitar three. Up.
Today, we're in the studio with the L.A. band that was the epitome of the progressive rock spirit.
It really was the key we hoped it would be. Suddenly, we were on bigger bills, and we were headlining our own smaller concerts. People came saying not, well, what is Spirit about, but knowing a song. There's another sensation. When you play a song and for the first time you see the audience singing along or they know all the words, and that's like, wow, they got it. And that was pretty exciting for us.
Nature's weak, telling you something's wrong.
This one took months. And we went back in and we redid stuff. And, you know, we had, for good or for bad, we had someone given us enough rope to hang ourselves, and we were kind of using it up. Spent money, spent time, but had a belief that we were making a special album. And when it was put together, and it was, you sort of put that bow around it, and I remember coming up with the title, The 12 Dreams of Dr. Sardonicus, and it just, everything made sense, and it was our statement, our concept record.
Hey there, it's Jay Ferguson in the studio for the Best of Spirit.
Even on paper, the characters that comprised the eclectic Southern California band Spirit looked like a tie-dyed crazy quilt. There were musical differences, generational age differences, strikingly different physical appearances, and disparate levels of experience as professional musicians ranging from legendary jazz bands to Canoga Park carports. Spirit was formed in 1967 by guitarist Randy Wolfe, better known as Randy California, and his shaven-headed stepfather, jazz drummer Ed Cassidy, who had drummed for the West Coast jazz icons Cannonball Adderley, Thelonious Monk, Jerry Mulligan, and Art Pepper. Singer-songwriter Jay Ferguson and bass player Mark Andes were, like Randy, aspiring teenagers. Keyboard player John Locke completed the original Spirit lineup. Here's Jay Ferguson of Spirit.
A true Californian, born in Burbank, raised in the San Fernando Valley, a little town called Canoga Park. And then when we formed Spirit, we all moved to this place called Topanga Canyon, which was a little suburb of L.A. up in the hills, where all these bands are moving. Crosby, Stills, and Nash were up there. We were up there. Neil Young was up there. Kind of a little hangout. With the exception of Ed Cassidy, who was sort of a wonder of nature, we were all in our teens, and Randy California was 16 when we recorded our first record. I was into folk music before I was into rock, and there was a seminal folk club called the Ash Grove in L.A., and a lot of sort of proto-rockers that were folkies, and this includes members of the Byrds, the Rising Suns, Taj Mahal, people like that, would go to this club and play and hang out. And Randy was sort of like the kind of the club rat. He was the little kid that was running around. And when I first met him, he was 14 years old. And he was learning guitar from John Lee Hooker and Lightnin' Hopkins. And he was picking up this fabulous, you know, classic blues-oriented folk stuff. And we met, and we were both fans of a band called the Rising Suns, which was Ed Cassidy on drums, Ry Cooder on guitar, Taj Mahal was the singer, and Jesse Lee Kincaid was the second singer, and Gary Marker was the bass player. So just a lot of talent in that band, and they were one of those folk rock bands that was turning electric. And I think in emulation of them, we said, hey, let's try this. Let's try an electric band. And that was the formation of the pre-group to Spirit, which was called the Red Roosters. So the Red Roosters, you know, played around, didn't really get anywhere, and we kind of split apart at that point. Ed Cassidy married Randy's mom. This gets very complicated on all kinds of levels, but it was like, hi, Dad, can I have the next solo? It was wild. They all moved to the East Coast because Ed Cassidy's background, as opposed to us being folkies turned rockies, he was a jazz guy turned rock, and he still loved to play jazz, and the jazz club scene was very vital in New York City, so they went back there. And then Mark, Andes, and myself played in a variety of sort of garage bands, San Fernando Valley garage bands. While in New York, Randy California got into the club scene there and was noticed by someone named Jimmy James, who had this blues band called Jimmy James and the Blue Flames. And Jimmy James said, you know, I like you, kid. Why don't you be my rhythm guitar player? Why don't you be the second guitar player in this band? And he actually gave him his name because there was a second Randy in the band, so he became Randy California. Well, Jimmy James was Jimi Hendrix before he was whisked away to London by Chas Chandler. So Randy's education continued on the East Coast and learning from Jimi Hendrix, of all people.
Fresh Garbage from Spirit's 1968 debut album. I asked the man who wrote it and sang it, Jay Ferguson, if Ed Cassidy's jazz credentials meant more musically to the others, or if it was Ed's music business experience that was the attraction.
I say he was the father to Randy. He was kind of a father figure to all of us because we were really wet behind the ears. We were really literally in our teens. And this guy had been around, and we were in awe of his track record. He had played in big bands in the late 40s. He went that far back and had toured, did bus tours, and he'd played in the San Francisco Symphony Orchestra, and he'd played in a lot of seminal L.A. cool West Coast jazz groups in the 50s. So he had a great track record. And it was, I think it was more Cass's influence than anybody else's that led us to the sort of fusion style that Spirit came out with, kind of broke upon the scene with. Where we brought in Cass's jazz background, we brought in the folk background, we brought in the sort of the San Fernando Valley, as you said, West Coast Beach Boys rock and roll background of Mark and myself. And then there was John Locke, a great keyboard player, who was also basically a jazz player. So we were in awe of his musicality, and we were also in awe of his experience. And his experience in being in bands. I mean, he knew how bands operated, which is basically like families.
Jay Ferguson reveals just how close Spirit came to never making that first album.
But we were doing all the clubs in LA, and we were coming to the attention of the different record companies, and we were auditioning, and we were making tapes. And we were getting every door slammed in our face. Not once, but we did the whole circuit twice. We had already gone to Lou Adler, who was, in our eyes, just this monster in the music business, had just come off of putting Mamas and Papas together and putting them on the map. And he had passed on us. As I said, we did our second go-round. Please give us one more chance. Come and take a look at us. We, you know, check out the new songs. And we got Lou to agree to come out and watch a showcase one afternoon at the Whiskey. And I'm not exaggerating when I'm saying this was probably the last thing we were going to do. If nothing happened at that point, we were all going back to school. So Lou comes in, and it was, you know, Lou arrives in a limousine. The door opens inside the Whiskey. We're on stage, dark club. One guy walks in, walks to the farthest booth, sits down. His hat is over his eyes, says not a word. We look at each other, okay. We play, I don't know, 10 songs. The guy in the back booth gets up, says not a word, walks out, gets in the car and drives off. And we said, okay, well, we tried. And the next day the phone rang and it was Lou Adler. And he said, I want to sign you. I love what I heard. I want to make you my next project. And, you know, that's where it all started. It was like out of a bad B movie, I'm telling you.
From the 1968 Spirit debut, that's Mechanical World, co-written by Jay Ferguson and his boyhood buddy Mark Andes. The second Spirit album, entitled The Family That Plays Together, saw the emergence of a second songwriter with a pivotal song for Spirit. Here's Jay Ferguson.
When Spirit started, it was like a fusion jam band. We'd play these extended improvisational songs, and you know, everybody would solo, and every so often we'd do an old blues song and then maybe an original. Well, before anybody else in the band, for some reason, I got on the songwriting tip and I started writing songs. And I just seemed to have a knack for it, and I tried to draw on everybody's personal, you know, musical style and putting these things together. And when it came time to record the first album, it just turned out that I had written almost everything on there. But it was just simply, I think I was ahead of the curve, because the next album is when Randy came on. He came on as a writer, and he got those chops going. And he came up with our first real single, which is I Got a Line on You. And then from that second album on, we basically split the chores. It was a 50-50 deal. And I think there was, as opposed to a Jagger Richards where it's a collaboration, or Lennon McCartney, this became a sort of a friendly competition between two songwriters. We didn't co-write very much. I think the one successful co-written song was Dark Eyed Woman. But it was, he would come in with a song and it was great, and I'd say, God, I gotta write a better song, and I'd come in with the next song, and it was back and forth, and you know, sparks were flying, but it was really good creatively.
Jay Ferguson's intuitive feel for a hit song extended to the rough fragments that Randy California had for the embryonic stage of the song I Got a Line on You.
I might have heard the single in it before anybody else. Randy would often bring things in bits and pieces, and they were sort of disconnected, and we would put them together almost like this sort of Lego piece. Okay, let's make this the bridge and let's repeat the chorus. And he had this sort of small grab bag of great pieces. And he had this hook, this chorus, I Got a Line on You, and I went, oh, this is it. And my contribution on that song, more than anything else, was really the arrangement, in terms of helping him say, okay, let's go to the chorus here. Let's not hang around. Let's not do a long solo. Let's get to the point here. Let's make this a 3-minute Spirit song, which was unheard of, because Spirit was, you know, the 7-minute, 10-minute song specialist. Well, after the first album, and we were what you called an underground group. We were an FM radio phenomenon, which was great. But in following bands like The Doors, I mean, you realized, okay, if you really want to reach the wider audience, the single is important. And this became the first obvious candidate. And we got pretty excited. We went, this could be the tool that'll bring us out and, you know, bring us to a lot more people. And Lou Adler heard it immediately and went on it, and so did radio. I'm listening to KHJ93 in Los Angeles, the old AM rock station. Anybody my age growing up would know like the back of their hand. And they said, here's a single from our hometown group, Spirit. They put it on, and I went through the roof. I'm surprised I didn't crash the car. But there's no sensation. I mean, there's nothing like hearing your group for the first time on radio. It's just magic.
Let me take you, baby, down to the riverbed. Got to tell you something, go right to your head. To you.
Spirit's breakthrough hit from their second album, The Family That Plays Together, released late in 1968 and written and sung by teenage guitar prodigy Randy California. Next, Jay Ferguson reveals the effects that I Got a Line on You had on Spirit. I'm Redbeard, and you're in the studio for the best of Spirit. Welcome back in the studio for the best of Spirit. I'm Redbeard. Jay Ferguson, who had written all the songs on Spirit's first album, readily admits the obvious benefit from Spirit's first hit from the follow-up. Called I Got a Line on You, it was written and sung by guitarist Randy California, but according to Jay Ferguson, it signaled a subtle shift inside the band.
It really was the key we hoped it would be. Suddenly we're on bigger bills and we were headlining our own smaller concerts. There's another sensation when you play a song and for the first time you see the audience singing along or they know all the words, and that's like, wow, they got it. And that was pretty exciting for us. Well, I mean, there was no doubt about it. I had to step aside and share the spotlight. We did the first album and I had written the songs and I was the singer. And I was, you know, there was a lot more focus on just me. But then suddenly Randy had this hit song and he was the singer. And so I had to share it. And it was a little tough for me. It was like, well, wait a minute. But it made sense. And once I saw the dynamic, the two of us out there interplaying, and that's what ended up happening, is I would sing and bounce off of him. He would sing, bounce off of me. And the whole became greater than the sum of these two parts. So I think we both looked at it that way, that this was a good thing. I remember we went one afternoon to their house on 4th Street in Santa Monica, and I think Randy said, let's try to write a song together. And I think he actually started off with the riff, which is the introduction to that song, that great guitar riff. Guitar riff ends on a chord, and I picked it up on the piano, and I went, okay, how about this rhythmic feel? And we went, yeah, yeah, yeah. And I'm trying to this day to remember who came up with Dark Eyed Woman.
Dark-eyed woman on a hot summer night. Dark-eyed woman, are you burning tonight? Dark-eyed woman, won't you step in the light and tell me, dark-eyed woman, are you burning tonight? Tonight. Well, dark-eyed woman, it's a quarter to four. I hear your voice like a child at my door. Dark-eyed woman, I could love you.
From the 1969 third Spirit album, Clear, That's a rare Jay Ferguson-Randy California collaboration called Dark Eyed Woman. But the Clear album never built upon the promise of the hit I Got a Line on You. So by the time the decade of the 60s ended, the wind of change was blowing through Spirit. Jay Ferguson believes he can see it now more clearly.
You know, I think you have to step back to Clear. Clear was a very strange project. It started as a soundtrack for a movie by a French director named Jacques Demy, who had done The Umbrellas of Cherbourg. And a lot of the songs on Clear were written for the film. And the rest of the songs were sort of added on to. And so it was an incomplete kind of animal. And it really didn't follow up the second album, which had our hit single, properly. So there was a feeling of we kind of got off track, we've lost momentum, and then we came to Dr. Sardonicus. This is an important album. But by that time, we'd been into this, you know, 3 or 4 years of Spirit, and then you add on the Red Roosters a couple of years before that. We'd been together in this band for a while, and there were strains and cracks that were starting to show. And it really came from, you know, having 5 people that were really strong individuals. There were no followers in the band. They were all leaders in their own way. And each person would champion his music. You know, Cass was always in there for let's do this jazz. And I was on there for no, we should be more of a rock and roll band. And, there was always this pushing and pulling. And as long as the center held together, that pushing and pulling, you know, played itself out in some really great music. I mean, that tension was really part of it, and a lot of great stuff came out of it. But by the time we got to Sardonicus, it was just starting to wear thin, and it had kind of seeped into people's outlook on business and where the band was going. And I think we had maybe some different views of who we should be working with and which direction to go in. So it was a bit of a fragmentation going on. We go into the studio and do Dr. Sardonicus, and we decided it's time for us to do our own record. It's time for us to leave Lou and his guidance and do it on our own, because we had this sound in our heads that we had not yet been able to put to tape. We got with David Briggs, who had been producing Neil Young and lived in Topanga and was just a kind of a natural bandmate, soulmate. Went in and did this album, and it was an intensive experience. This one took months. And we went back in and we redid stuff. And, you know, we had, for good or for bad, we had someone giving us enough rope to hang ourselves, and we were kind of using it up. Spent money, spent time, but had a belief that we were making a special album. And when it was put together, and it was, you sort of put that bow around it, and I remember coming up with the title, The 12 Dreams of Dr. Sardonicus, and it just, everything made sense, and it was our statement, our concept record.
Touches.
Mr. Skin is an homage to Sly and the Family Stone. I just love that. Spirit was great because Spirit gave you license to write anything and everything. Because this band would play country western, it would play jazz, it would play heavy metal. I mean, it was open season. So I wrote a sort of an R&B kind of thing with R&B horns. And the title refers to, on one level, refers to a fellow band member, Ed Cassidy, who we used to kind of call Mr. Skin just because of the shiny dome. But it's really a story about sex in America. And we had a ball cutting that, and we had a great horn section come in and just blow on it.
That's Jay Ferguson, composer and singer with Spirit, with the 1970 fourth album, The 12 Dreams of Dr. Sardonicus. Now, when Jay returns, you'll hear of gatekeepers who wield great power to build up or destroy bands. You'll hear of vindication, and you'll hear of tragedy and songs left unsung. I'm Redbeard, in the studio for the best of Spirit.
Hey, this is Jay Ferguson back in the studio for the 12 Dreams of Dr. Sardonicus by my group Spirit, and here is Redbeard.
Thanks so much, Jay. The fourth Spirit album, titled after a bad sci-fi film, received several lukewarm reviews. Most damaging was the review from LA Times music writer Robert Hilburn. Here's singer-songwriter Jay Ferguson of Spirit.
The momentum had kind of gone out a little bit. The audience may have sort of diminished, and we came up with what we thought was our big statement comeback record, and it was released to much less than ecstatic response. We got some bad reviews. The sales weren't that good, and we did not understand why. And this, of course, this leads to second guessing. What did we do wrong? What did we do? But we did not regain the momentum that we thought we would. And at the time, we felt we'd kind of failed. We kind of dropped the ball with the Sardonicus record, which is so ironic because it just kept selling little bit by little bit, and then kept selling a little bit more and hung around. And then even after the band broke up, it kept going, and it just grew in stature and grew in sales, and it became obviously our biggest record and became what a lot of critics are calling one of the 10 best records of that decade. It just gained a lot of respect and, you know, gave us vindication after the fact.
Living in the city, I've been abused. He has jobs I keep, the people I meet, but don't do more than make me amused. Everywhere I turn now, just more bad news. So don't look now, don't ask how, gonna find me a way to the animal. Too long. Hey, hey, got too much to lose, got to get.
That's called Animal Zoo from the original Spirits' fourth album, 1970's The 12 Dreams of Dr. Sardonicus. Before music critics could reevaluate the importance of the album, before the steady sales could add up to the best-selling Spirit album ever, Jay Ferguson and Mark Andes would leave to form the fun-loving rock and roll band JoJo Gunn. Jay Ferguson remembers the defining moment vividly.
There was a single crystallizing moment, and I'm not going to try to place blame or anything, but we had just booked our first tour of Japan, and the tour was pre-sold. Every seat in that tour had been sold out. We were so excited. I was especially excited to go to Japan. I've always been fascinated by the country. We get to the airport. We literally get on the tarmac, walking to the plane that was going to connect us to the international flight. And a member of the band said, "I don't feel good about this. We're not going." It was just unbelievable. We looked at each other, "What?" And said, "No, I just, there's something about this. It doesn't feel right. I don't think we should be doing this. We're not going." And literally, that was it. We stared at each other. We walked off. The tour was canceled. And that night in the hotel, Mark and I talked, and we said, "This is too crazy." We just didn't feel we could leave our future in this kind of an environment where things were really starting to happen in that level. And that's when I think we made the decision, you know, it's time for us to really think outside the band, because it's too crazy for us to live this way.
But before Ed Cassidy and Randy California continued on in Spirit without Jay Ferguson and Mark Andes, Randy left us all a musical gift.
He came in and I think more than any song he's ever written, that song was complete. I mean, he really knew where every note was going to be, and he knew where every vocal was going to be. And that is the song that I probably changed the least, that I probably added the least to. He really knew that song. It just came out of his, I think, the core of his being. You know, in my opinion, maybe the greatest of all the Spirit songs. Just a beautiful, timeless, but timely piece for the time. I mean, I use another cliche. It's a soulful vocal. Randy put everything into that. And I think that... just the purity of his emotion in writing the song carries through the song and is what carried that song, you know, into the public. And a lot of people, you know, fell in love with that.
Nature's waiting, you, something's wrong. It's nature's waiting, you, in a song. Telling you.
Nature's Way from Spirit and the 1970 album The 12 Dreams of Dr. Sardonicus. The song and vocal are by Randy California. In January 1997, the ways of nature conspired to take Randy California away. Here's Jay Ferguson.
He was swimming with his son, Quinn. They were on a deserted beach, and they got caught in a vicious undertow, which was pulling him out to sea. And I guess Randy spent all his energy pushing Quinn towards the shore and actually got Quinn to the breakers, and Quinn got in. Quinn was carried in, and Quinn got to the shore. And this is heartbreaking. Quinn gets to the shore. He turns around. He looks out, and there's no sign of his father and was never seen. Oh, man. And there you have the bookend. You have the great tragedy of the band and one of the great stories of the band. Randy was, he was unbreakable. He was bulletproof. This guy was a force of nature. When the phone rang and someone told me that he had drowned off the coast of Maui and they hadn't found the body, I had the same reaction that everybody who knew Randy had. Well, he's going to turn up. He's going to swim 2 miles and he's going to turn up on another island, or he's going to wash ashore somewhere else and we'll hear from him. It was unthinkable that Randy would be gone, that we'd lose him. And I think it took literally weeks for people to finally let go and say Randy passed on. Because Randy was just, as I said, a force of nature, and a force of nature creatively, a pure spirit creatively. Just a person who could channel music like no one I've ever seen. But there was a sense that we had unfinished business. At least I did. I had unfinished business with Randy. There was stuff that we had yet to do, that I had this feeling in my heart, in my gut, that we were meant to somewhere down the line get back and do something together. And it was kind of the process. After Spirit broke up, we would touch bases and run into each other and do little bits of music together, and we did an odd album and an odd tour. And it was because we knew that this was a special bunch of people and we didn't want to lose contact. Well, when Randy passed on, that door closed. There will be no more Spirit, and that's very sad.
That was Jay Ferguson on the loss of Randy California. I'm Redbeard in the studio.